So to kick things off in 1512, there's this guy, Egidio da Viterbo. He stands right in front of the Pope and like a whole room full of cardinals and basically tells them to their faces that they are the problem.
Right, which is just a wild thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, he actually said men must be changed by religion, not religion by men. And he wasn't some angry protester outside the gates, right? He was literally one of their own top advisors. But he was totally ignored by leaders like Cardinal Luigi d'Aragona, who was just busy spending a fortune on fine watches and luxury tours.
Exactly. It's a classic case of the center being way too insulated to hear the periphery. And that's really what our exploration into the source material today is all about. We're digging into a stack of research on the Age of Reformation, so roughly 1350 to 1650.
Okay, so we're looking past that standard heroic rebel narrative then.
We are, yeah. Our mission is to explore how people actually tried to fix the Catholic Church from the inside out. You can think of it as a masterclass in the difference between doing a gut renovation on a family estate versus just tearing the whole house down because the plumbing is leaky.
I do really love that house analogy. But so why did those internal warnings work? Because you have Egidio in 1512, mm-hmm. and even before him, St. Catherine of Siena, she literally told the Pope to be a man and get back to Rome.
He did, yeah. She was fierce.
So if the calls for reform were so loud and so internal, why did the house eventually split?
Well, because true reform is just incredibly difficult. Mm. Based on our sources, it requires four specific things: charity, unity, patience, and tradition. Okay. It's about spiritual docility, really having the humility to trust the slow process rather than jumping to extreme all or nothing solutions. And, you know, when you lose that patience, you stop trying to fix the house and you just start building a rival subdivision across the street.
Right. And we definitely have to talk about the giant tech disruptor that made that rival subdivision possible. I mean, the printing press, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. The paradigm shift there is massive.
Because before 1439, you experienced faith through community, ritual, signs. It was very much an oral culture. And then suddenly, bam, everyone has a book.
Yeah, and that's exactly where the biblicism trap kicks in. The reformers argued for sola scriptura, this idea that the Bible is so clear, it basically interprets itself.
Right.
But, well, you've probably seen this in your own life. When everyone has the exact same set of facts, but no shared way to interpret them, you just get chaos. So instead of one clear truth, the printing press created a literal jungle of completely incompatible truths.
Wait, I have to push back a little there. You're making the printing press sound like a total disaster for society.
Mm.
Didn't it democratize knowledge? I mean, literacy is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Are you saying it would have been better to keep people in the dark?
No, not at all. But literacy changed the actual mechanism of truth. It moved faith from the heart and the physical community and forced it into the abstract individual head.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So it didn't just democratize knowledge. It often replaced a single authority with what we might call the tyranny of the loudest pamphlet. If the text is the only authority, then whoever yells their interpretation the loudest wins.
Right. And you see the extreme dark version of this in the Minster Rebellion.
Yes, exactly.
Where this idea of private revelation spirals into an actual cult-like regime and eventually a massacre. It's like a warning about what happens when you separate the spirit entirely from the physical community.
Right. It's the difference between having Christian freedom as a principle versus using it as a weapon. But there were people who used that same logic defensively. I'm thinking of Caritas Pirkheimer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, her story is fascinating. She was the nun in Nuremberg who actually used the reformers' own arguments to resist them.
Right.
She was. When the city tried to force her convent to close, she basically said, "Well, if you truly believe in Christian freedom, then I should be free to stay exactly where I am."
That's brilliant. She was renovating her corner of the house just by holding her ground.
It's a perfect example of that both-hand approach. And you see that same proactive energy in the Jesuits, too. Ignatius of Loyola didn't want to retreat from the world. He created the spiritual exercises.
Right, which wasn't just a book of rules.
No, not at all. It was more like a psychological tool designed to help you find God in all things. It was a very non-monastic way to integrate faith and reason, you know, grace and works.
So if the house was falling apart, the Jesuits were kind of the elite contractors coming in with a brand new toolkit. And that leads us to the Council of Trent and the Baroque response.
Yeah.
This wasn't just a defensive move on their part, was it?
No, it was actually a massive resacralization. If you think about Baroque art like Caravaggio or Titian, it was basically intentional user experience design.
User experience, wow.
Yeah. Because while other groups were stripping churches bare and focusing only on the text, the church leaned hard into the senses. They used intense light, heavy shadow, and physical emotion to bypass the intellect entirely and hit the heart.
So they wanted you to actually feel the divine in the material world, like in bread and water and art. It's essentially the difference between reading a black and white manual about a house and actually standing in a beautiful, glowing room.
That's exactly it. The sources really emphasize that the church was always meant to be a hospital for sinners, not some exclusive society of saints. It's a messy historical reality, not just a pristine, abstract idea.
Right. You stay in the house even when the roof is leaking, because the foundation is what matters.
Exactly.
Well, as we wrap up this exploration, I want to leave everyone with a provocative thought. We've seen how the printing press fractured the 16th century by making every person their own ultimate authority. So if that massive tech shift created the biblicism trap back then, what is our current digital age, where everyone has their own algorithm of truth doing to our ability to live in the same house today?